So, you know, there are those people in life who work really hard to help other people. And they serve and they sacrifice themselves and they do whatever they can to make people's lives better. And so we have a number of people like that in this church. And I know that Frank, for example, is going to go down to Myrtle Beach. Is that right, Frank? You are soon? Is that right?
Wednesday,
yeah. So Frank goes out, and I don't know if you've ever seen this, but he goes out and when he prepares for people, it's just the food that he cooks and the amount of food, like if you can imagine fixing food for 20 or 25 single guys or young guys in one place, he does that, right? So he goes out and he buys all this stuff and he tries to prepare, he tries to think of everything. So just this past week, Frank went out to, where'd you go? To
Sam's
Club, and I guess it was mayhem there. Was it mayhem, Frank?
Yeah.
And all he was trying to do was just trying to help people, but all these other people were helping themselves too much. So Frank, in an effort to help you in this endeavor to influence these young men, I decided to give you this so that you can stock your supplies because I know it was really difficult getting these. So here you go. Oops. So it's a special presentation. That's your. That's a special roll. Some people just need a hand up, don't you think? I mean, with our trying to help other people, they just need a help. And so that was my effort, Frank, to help you in that way. And I hope you appreciate it. So
probably mount
that, yeah. I put it on Facebook. I put a picture with Gollum holding a roll of that. And then I put this inscription below it. One roll to rule them all, one roll to find them, one roll to bring them all, and in the darkness bind them. So if any of you know anything about the Lord of the Rings, you know what that inscription means. So any case, don't you think we need a little levity?
Yes.
I think we need a little levity. So, hey, on the back there on the chair, I printed off what I think is just one of the great iconic prayers of all time. And it's called St. Patrick's Breastplate Prayer. Are any of you familiar with this prayer? So I printed it front. So there's it's lengthy. But what you would do with this prayer is that in your devotional time, you can use it to just pray through meditatively the different portions of the prayer and really kind of apply it to your life and to your circumstances. So this has been an enduring prayer. There are 20 copies back there. I didn't think if we run out and you want more. But given the fact that we may have to change some things up and you might be looking for some things that would be helpful to you, I really think this is a great prayer. So I put 20 copies back there. If we run out and you need more, I would be happy to run over right after the service and make some more copies. So I think it would be very helpful. Okay? So We're gonna begin with John chapter 10, verses 11 through 21. I am the good shepherd. I think this is number 5 of the I Am series. And so, if you want to turn to your Bibles, John chapter 10, verses 11 through 21. And while you're turning to that, just remember this. Unlike the other I Am passages, this I Am follows immediately, I am the gate. So this passage here, I am the good shepherd, is a further extrapolation of what Jesus was trying to tell himself in terms of being I am the gate. The I am the gate is a broader pronunciation about himself. The I am the good shepherd drills down more. Now, I don't think I'll have time to get into it today, but if you want to this week, you can read Isaiah 34. Ezekiel 34. Ezekiel 34 was what Jesus had in mind when he was saying, I am the good shepherd. And so when you interpret the scriptures, You have to interpret the scriptures not only in terms of what the author had in mind, but the context within which it was said. So this, I am the good shepherd, immediately followed Jesus' encounter with the blind man and the blind man's encounter with the Pharisees and the Pharisees' absurd response to the blind man. And so Jesus, when he says, I am the shepherd, when he says, I am the good shepherd, every Pharisee scribe there would have known that he was referencing Ezekiel 34. And so this is the word, because he goes on to say, this is what's going to happen to him. It's a damning commentary on the Pharisees by saying, I am the good shepherd, and knowing they would have referenced Ezekiel 34. So, and so this is a powerful statement. And, of course, Jesus is using yet another metaphor, another visual that everybody there would have known. Everybody there would have seen it. Everybody. So, they would have been well aware of all of the implications involved of what it means for him to refer to himself as the Good Shepherd. So, now that you probably have found the text in your Bibles, beginning with verse 11, I am the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. Remember, he was just talking about, I am the gate, referencing a pen? Here he is. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father. I just want to stop there. This is a rabbit trail, but it's an important rabbit trail. There are a significant number of people who call themselves evangelicals who do not believe that Jesus came to offer his life. They see that as child abuse, that the Father would ask the Son or allow the Son to sacrifice himself. So this is one of these primary texts that you would point to and say, I think you're wrong, and this is the reason. Here's Jesus himself saying, I'm going to lay my life down, and I do that of my own accord, right? So just a little cultural awareness within the church. Verse 19, at these words, the Jews again were divided. Many of them said, he is demon-possessed and raving mad. Why listen to him? But others said, these are not the sayings of a man possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? And so he's referencing the blind man, right? So there's still this conversation is still fresh about what happened to the blind man and we'll go over this, I think, on the next I Am series. So you'll recall in that particular story, as the blind man is inquiring about whether the Pharisees want to know Jesus or not, and they're like, no, we don't really want to know him. And, why don't you want to know him? I mean, he's a good guy. He did this thing for me. And so he goes on to say, you know, that he doesn't think that they have a right perspective on who Jesus is. And their response to him was, you were steeped in your sins at birth. Don't lecture us, right? And so right after that, Jesus finds the blind man and he talks to them. And then he goes on and talks about how I am the gate and I am the good shepherd. And all with the audience of the shepherd, all with the audience of the Pharisees, the scribes, the religious teachers, so that's the immediate context, right? So none of this hangs by itself. It all flows in. And so there's this unpacking of the narrative and the story itself that gives, I think, helpful perspective. So look, I'm going to take a little bit of a diversion in terms of where I would normally go with this. And I'm going to say that I want to understand this text in our current time about who Jesus is and the kind of person he was. And I'm not going to get so much into his laying his life down for us, although there's a certain sense in which that it was true both earthly and both eternally. Jesus laid his life. He sacrificed his life as a human being. He sacrificed his life as God. And so I think that's important to note. But during, I think, times like this, you know, it's important for people like myself who are pastors to be good shepherds. So I remember when President Trump announced that there was going to be an international travel ban, from that time on, it seemed like a pall came over the culture. And then when he did his news conference a couple days ago, I mean, when I was out in public, it seemed to me that there were some people who just had these blank looks, you know, and it just seemed like the zombie apocalypse was upon us. You know, that's kind of how people were acting, and some of them were crazy in terms of what they were doing. So I feel like that it's important for me to help give perspective on what is happening now in the world in which we live and what our response is, what my response is as a pastor. And then, to amplify that out, what our response is as a church, because this church is a shepherding entity in this community. So, Josephus, one of the great historians of the church and that particular time in Palestine, referenced Christians who were going through difficult times, and when he saw them do that, how it was so contrary to the other parts of the world that he saw. And so his comment was this: oh, how they love each other. Oh, how they love each other. That it struck him as being distinctive and unique, in particular, and even peculiar, that the church, during difficult times, would choose to distinguish themselves by loving each other as Christ loved them, and as an entity of Christ, shepherding people who were lost and confused and did not have any answers. And so, I love to say this, in Japanese, the word for chaos is the same word for opportunity. The same word. So whatever chaos we see going on in our world, you and I have a unique opportunity, because there are people who are lost. They are confused. They don't know what to do. And we can help bring perspective by modeling Christ in their lives, by letting them see how we do what we do with and for each other. So when we think about that, then, we have to understand that there are certain institutions that intentionally create disproportionate fear. In Jesus' day, Pharisees created disproportionate fear. You aren't faithful. You don't follow the law close enough. You realize that you were born in poverty because of the sin of your parents. The blind man probably sinned in the womb. That's why he's blind. So they would create this disproportionate fear. And people were hopeless. And they felt helpless. And they didn't know where to go. Uncertainty is not fun, is it? So this past week, any of you who are close to retirement, when you saw Wall Street tank, you were like, ah. Right? That you were thinking. And they go, what's going to happen now? And there are a whole host of other things that were associated with that. What's going to happen? Then if you were watching the TV on Friday, you saw that it rebounded 2,000 points, the single biggest rebound in the history of Wall Street. We just don't know where these things are going to go. But we do know that the Lord is the source of our strength and our certainty. And so we can't trust what the world will do, but we can trust how Christ will work in our lives. So fear creates uncertainty. Uncertainty allows for irrational actions by some and control of those in fear by others. Can you keep going there, please? Keep going. Yep. Keep going. Keep going. I skipped over those slides, so I have more time for other stuff. Go ahead, please. You'll see it. It says fear creates uncertainty. There we go. Fear creates uncertainty. Uncertainty allows for irrational actions by some, like what Frank encountered, like some of us encountered. And so those irrational actions, so it allows for irrational actions by some. We don't know what to do. And because we are irrational and fearful, then others can move in and they can control us. That's exactly what the Pharisees did to their people. That's why they were not good shepherds for their people. That's exactly where people who are supposed to be shepherding us, that's exactly what they do to us. And we have to rise above that. We have to see through that and see Christ at work and what Christ calls us to do in terms of work during times when there's so much uncertainty and fear in the world in which we live. We can't let that go. We have to live victoriously. I was affected by it too, but I'm telling you, I'm punching through it. I'm not going to let it drag me down. There has to be people in the world who maintain a heart and a voice of hope and of encouragement. So let me just give you a couple of facts. Here's what we know. And you can check these out for yourself. Because what you hear on TV or on the radio is not. It is not. It is designed. Look, every time you click a news thing on your computer, money goes to that news platform. So they want your attention, and so they will give you a headline that will get your attention. It's called clickbait. And then you will go there, and as soon as you click that, then that the advertising company on that website sends that place money. Right? The same is true when you watch TV. They know if you're watching their program. And so based on how many people are watching that program, advertisers give them so much money. And the people who are on those shows want you to think a certain way. Do you think they do what they do because they really are altruistic? Do you think they do what they do because they genuinely care? No, they're very concerned about how you think and therefore how you behave based on what you think. So here's what we know. If you are age 60 and above with severe and chronic health preconditions, you are highly susceptible to coronavirus if exposed. We know this. This is what the data says. So what is our church's response to that? If you're age 50 and below, and otherwise healthy, you stand about a 99% chance of recovery if you contract coronavirus. The mortality rate is disproportionately high for people age 60 and above, way disproportionately above. The reason why Italy is experiencing so many deaths right now is because Italy is the second oldest nation in the world. But you won't hear that on the news because it doesn't advance their cause. About 80% of those who contract CV19 show mild to no symptoms at all, 80%. If you're age 20 or younger, you may test fully positive with coronavirus and present no symptoms, yet you still can transmit it to others. There are virtually no cases of anyone that age and younger dying from coronavirus aside from severe health conditions, pre-existing severe health conditions. So what does this mean? It means that coronavirus is highly contagious, more so than the flu, and great efforts must be made by all to contain it. And I'll go on to say why in just a few minutes, but I want to give you some perspective here. The Spanish flu pandemic in 1918 The great influenza pandemic of 1918, between 50 and 100 million people were thought to have died, representing as much as 5% of the world's population. Half a billion people were infected. That was 102 years ago. Worldwide, we have 7.8 billion people. Of those 7.8 billion people, there are 5,973 deaths globally as of this morning. Out of 7.8 billion people, that represents a 3.4% mortality rate from those known to be infected. That's going to go down because there are many more people who have been infected. And once we begin to test, we'll see that the mortality rate. So, for example, if there are two people, one gets sick, or both get sick and one dies, what's the mortality rate? 50%. If you have 10 people and three people die, what's the mortality rate? 30%. Do you see where I'm going with this? The higher the incidences of the infection that we find, we will see that the mortality rate of those infections will begin to shrink. That is not what you're hearing on the news, right? For reasons. The pandemic mortality rate is 7.2%. The mortality rate for CV19 right now is 3.4% at its highest.
So why are they saying the pandemic?
Well, you could ask that question because of how big it is all over the place. But in terms of how many people it's infected, that's the difference. So the mortality rate is less than 1/1,000,000 of 1%. Far less than 1/1,000,000 of 1% of the people who are dying from CV19 represent 1/1,000,000, far less of 1/1,000,000 of 1%. Do you know? In fact, when I tried to do that on the computer, it came up with some kind of wacky algorithmic formula that I couldn't understand because it was so small. In the USA population, we have 330 million people. Nationally, there are 3,046 known to be infected as of this morning. That will go way up as we begin to test. About 10 of those 2,920 people are considered to be critical. 10 out of almost 3,000 people are considered to be critical. There have been 60 total deaths. With testing, the mortality rate will go down. The percentage of the population that is infected is that number right there. That's the percentage of the people who've been infected. Do you see how many zeros that is? That's of 1%. That's far less than 1/1,000,000 of 1%. So, who must we primarily care for and protect? Well, there are two stages to this. So I'm just speaking to you as your pastor. Here's the first stage. For those 60 and above, especially with severe and chronic health preconditions, we have to protect them. And we have some of those people in this church right now. And I don't want to embarrass anybody, but so I won't say their names, but there are at least, I think, 3 or 4 or 5 people here who would be highly susceptible to coronavirus. And so we have to protect them. We also have to protect anyone who has a pre-existing severe and or chronic health condition. They could be very young. So those people are highly susceptible. The mortality rate for them is very high. So we have, as church people, we have to take responsibility to care for those people and to protect them at all costs. Which is why I'm making significant changes in my life right now to protect my wife. So I'm probably going to get fat and out of shape. But maybe that's what happens, you know, so that I don't go someplace and get something that I don't even know I have and give it to her. So if you have elderly people in your family, in your life, then do what you need to do to keep them from becoming infected, being a carrier, not even know it. So limit your exposure, use hygiene and social distancing. Provide substantive support by doing for those at risk to reduce the possibility of exposure. Some people who are elderly don't have transportation to get their medication or their food. Are there people here in this church that would be willing to go get the medication and the food for those people who need it? Are you willing to do that? Are you willing to do that for your elderly parents, aunts and uncles, neighbors? You should be. I should be. To keep them from going into places where they shouldn't be right now. So we must also care for people who are in this second stage of the dynamics of the pandemic, and that's this stage. There are people who have financially been laid off, who are not going to make money that they normally make. They can't buy their food. They may not be able to pay their utilities. It's going to hurt them. Small business owners, it's going to hurt them. I'll say this. He didn't ask me to, but I'll say this. People like Kevin Crawford, who have a small business. If people don't patronize him, this hurts people like him badly. If you have a car that needs service in any way, go to Kevin Crawford. He will take care of you. He's as honest as the day is long. But we have to help our brothers and sisters in situations like this because they are really adversely affected by that. I'm not trying to embarrass him. I'm just saying, I'm using him as an example. There are parents who have to work, but because their kids are off from school, they don't have anyone to watch their kids. Child care. Can you help parents out for 2 weeks who need child care? That's a real thing. It's a big thing. You mark my words, there'll be some parents working throughout the country somewhere who can't get child care and an apartment will catch on fire or a house will burn down because those kids are home alone. How about errands for food and medicine? People who can't get out, that we could get food for them. Or how about because people couldn't stock up, they have enough food for several days, but they don't have enough food to maybe get through, or some of the essentials like toilet paper or milk and eggs or those. Can we do that? Can we help in that way? Home repair. Some of our people who are fragile and vulnerable may need help with certain kinds of things when it comes to home repair. We have some people in our church who normally do that, but they shouldn't do that right now because they shouldn't be out there. So other people are going to have to step in and help in that way. If you get that request, if you hear that there's that need, this is the chaos, that's the opportunity. You see what I'm saying? Living in community and staying in touch with encouragement and prayer, calling each other, texting one another, inviting each other over for dinner or something like that. But staying in touch so that people don't feel isolated. Trust me, 2 weeks from now, people are going to be feeling cabin fever. Right? They love their spouses, but their spouses are driving them nuts. So they need a break. Maintain perspective. Guard your mind, guard your heart from those forces that are trying to influence you in ways that you should not be influenced. Be careful how much you watch and how much you read online or on the TV or whatever. Just guard your heart and your mind and encourage other people to do that as well. Remember, there are significant entities who reprehensibly are seeking to sow fear and discord for material and ideological gain. There are people who are reprehensibly right now planning and strategizing how they can use this chaos for their own material. I'm going to click on this website or ideological gain. I'm going to present the facts in this way so they will think in that manner. Guard your heart and your mind. So what I have here then is I propose a covenant to each other. This is the covenant for these next few weeks, however long these things go, because we may not be able to meet. We have to assess that. But here's the covenant. Even if we don't have church, let's make a covenant to still be the church. All right? You follow me? So here's number one. Number one is pray conversationally and intercessionally on a daily basis. Every day, everybody here, make it a point to find a time in your day where you wake up or during your lunch period or whenever it is, and you select that time, you block that time out where you pray intercessionally and conversationally with God. You are praying intercessory prayer. I'm praying on behalf of these people and this situation, these situations. And then I'm going to pray just conversation with God because I love Him. Number two, remember to praise and worship God on a daily basis. Listen to some great music. Read your Bible. Allow the Holy Spirit to speak to you. I was doing that this morning. I found this wonderful website of contemporary music, and there was this wonderful song called "I Surrender." Beautiful, beautiful song, and it really impacted my heart. So choose to block out all this stuff. If some of you are off and you don't have as much to do because you have time off, choose to use this time. Take the chaos and make it an opportunity to get closer to God through worship and praise. Number three, practice loving and sacrificial community. Maybe it's just words of encouragement. Like Louise, that we can't go and visit, but we can call her.
Send cards and
encourage her.
What's that?
Her birthday was on Friday. Exactly. But there are any number of people that you know, both in this church and outside this church, who could use that kind of encouragement. A phone call, a card, even a text. We can do these. We can live in community, and we can live sacrificially in community. So there might be some people who run out of some food, and you have some extra. You give it to them. There might be some people who run out of gas money. They need gas. Give them some money to get gas. Speak to their lives as Christ would. Shepherd their lives as Christ would. Number four, help the fragile and vulnerable among you. There are some people who will not be impacted by the coronavirus at all, but the circumstances will impact their lives dramatically. And if it does, and their lives are fragile and they're barely hanging on, help them in some way. Choose. Pray during your prayer time. Lord, show me who this person can be. Show me how I can help them. Number five, be ready to share whatever you have with those in need. Be ready to share whatever you have with those in need. If you have an abundance of something, share it. If you have a skill, if you have a resource, if you have extra milk and extra eggs, whatever it is, share it. Because people are confused. They're afraid. There's a lot of uncertainty. And if you go through life guided by Christ as He shepherds you, you will have these unique opportunities to shepherd other people. And Christ will be glorified. Number six, continue to be diligent in your financial support of this church. Because the truth of the matter is, when people don't come, they generally don't give. And if we don't have church for the next two or three Sundays, it is going to hurt us. And there are people here, myself included, but others as well, who are really, really dependent upon what we pay them. There are people here, in addition to that, that are really, really dependent upon what we do for other people. Counseling, ministry, all of those kinds of things. So I'm just saying, you know, even though we're going to go through this, continue to remember the church and support us financially. I would be irresponsible to not remind us of that. I get it. There are some churches and some pastors out there that make money a huge thing. You hardly ever hear me talk about that. But I need to talk about it today because I know what happens when we don't have church for a Sunday, let alone two or three Sundays. So if you support us financially, please continue to do that. Number seven, and finally, follow us, Conway Alliance Church, online weekly in whatever way you can. So we'll have a Facebook presence. We'll certainly have a podcast presence. And just follow along with us so that you can maintain. And we may talk about things like we even have a kind of chat room, whatever. I'll talk to Bree and see what we can do, but there might be those kinds of things as well. So look, I will be your shepherd in any way that I possibly can during this time. Our leadership will be your shepherd. And there are going to be some challenges I'm going to have for our elders as well when we meet this afternoon. And our church will be a shepherd to the world around us. And if they are a shepherd to the world around us, that will depend not just on me, not just on the elders. It will depend on the people who are part of this church. In what way will Christ shine through you in the darkness of uncertainty and fear that these powerful entities in our culture are seeking to sow? How will your light break through all that, give perspective, wisdom, and hope? That's what we have to do. So I hope that you receive this well, and I hope that we can do that together. And we're just going to go at this, and we're going to lean into it. We are not going to lean away from it. All right?